They told her the Duke was rotting, that his flesh failed him slowly beneath layers of silk and shadow, that servants whispered outside his doors but never lingered, that no woman stayed long enough to speak of what she had seen. So Catherine Foster pressed a lace handkerchief to her nose as the heavy oak doors began to open. She braced herself, steeled her breath, prepared for the stench of decay that everyone promised would greet her. But when she stepped inside Blackthorn Estate's master chamber, there was nothing. No rot, no foul air, no corpse-like odor clinging to the velvet drapes or settling into the Persian rugs. Only silence, clean air, and the quiet sound of a man breathing somewhere in the dimness. Catherine lowered the handkerchief slowly, her fingers trembling despite her best efforts to appear composed. The chamber stretched before her in shades of midnight blue and charcoal grey. Candlelight flickered from silver sconces, casting long shadows across mahogany furniture and floor-to-ceiling bookshelves. Everything was immaculate, ordered. Nothing like the diseased nightmare she had been promised. "You may enter fully," a voice said from the darkness near the window, "or you may leave. Either choice is yours." Catherine's spine straightened. She had been raised to be useful, not ornamental. To solve problems, not flee from them. So she stepped forward, letting the door close behind her, with a soft click that felt far too final. The man emerged from the shadows slowly, and Catherine's breath caught despite herself. The Duke Fabian Osborne was not the monster Victor had described. He was tall, lean, and moved with the controlled grace of someone accustomed to managing pain without complaint. His dark hair was swept back from a face that bore the sharp, aristocratic features of old bloodlines. But it was his skin that drew her attention. Pale, almost translucent in places, with faint marks along his jaw and the visible portion of his neck. Strange discolorations that looked like bruises, but weren't quite. Like his body was at war with itself in ways no physician had named. Yet his eyes were clear, intelligent, watching her with an intensity that made her feel simultaneously exposed and seen. "I was told you required a woman," Catherine said, her voice colder than she intended. She had practiced this distance, needed it. Fabian's expression did not change. "I was told nothing." Catherine blinked. "I don't understand." "Neither do I." He moved to a chair near the fireplace and sat with careful precision. "I did not request companionship. I did not ask for assistance, and I most certainly did not invite someone to be sent to me like a sacrificial offering." The words struck harder than Catherine expected. She had assumed many things about this arrangement, that the Duke was desperate, that he had bargained for her presence, that this entire situation had been his doing. But if he had not asked for her, then who had? "Victor Stevens," Catherine said slowly, testing the name in this new context. "My fiancé. He said you had made an arrangement." Something dark flickered across Fabian's face. "Victor Stevens is a man who builds his fortune on the misfortunes of others. If he told you I requested this, he lied." Catherine's hands curled into fists at her sides. She had suspected Victor of many things over the past weeks. Callousness, ambition, a willingness to prioritize status over sentiment. But outright deception about the very foundation of this arrangement? That was a cruelty she had not fully prepared herself to face. "Then why am I here?" she whispered. Fabian studied her for a long moment, his gaze moving over her face as if memorizing the pattern of her confusion. "Because men like Victor trade in leverage, and apparently you were worth something to someone." The room tilted slightly. Catherine pressed a hand to the back of the nearest chair, steadying herself against the weight of that truth. She had been traded. not offered out of necessity, not sacrificed for a greater good. Traded. You should sit, Fabian said quietly, before you fall. Catherine wanted to refuse, wanted to maintain her composure, but her knees betrayed her, and she sank into the chair opposite him, her mind racing. What happens now? She managed to ask. Fabian leaned back, his expression unreadable. That depends entirely on what you were told to do here. Catherine swallowed hard. I was told to comfort you, to ease your final days. My final days. Fabian's mouth curved into something too bitter to be called a smile. How generous of him to provide me with company for my imminent demise. You're not dying. I am not well, Fabian corrected. But I am also not on the edge of the grave, despite what society seems to believe. He paused, his eyes sharpening. What else did he tell you? Catherine hesitated. But if this man hadn't asked for her, then she owed Victor's secrets no loyalty. He told me not to help you, she said quietly. He told me to let nature take its course. The silence that followed was absolute. Fabian did not rage, did not stand or shout or show any outward sign of anger, but something in his stillness became dangerous, like a blade held perfectly steady before the strike. He wants me dead, Fabian said, his voice soft as silk and twice as sharp, and he sent you here to watch it happen. Catherine's throat tightened. Yes, but you came anyway. I had no choice. Fabian tilted his head slightly. There is always a choice, Miss Foster. Not when the alternative is ruin, Catherine said, her voice hardening. Not when refusal means losing everything. For the first time, at something like understanding flickered in Fabian's eyes. He nodded slowly, as if acknowledging a truth they both knew too well. Then we find ourselves in a rather unusual position, he said. You were sent here against your will to witness my death. I did not request your presence and have no intention of dying to satisfy anyone's ambitions. He paused. The question is, what do we do about it? Catherine looked at him fully then. Really looked at the man who had been reduced to rumor and scandal, who had been painted as monstrous when he was simply suffering, who had been alone in this vast estate with an illness no one understood and enemies who wanted him gone. And she made a decision. I stay, Catherine said firmly. Not for Victor. Not even for you. For myself. Fabian's eyebrows rose slightly. Explain. If I return now, ought I go back to a man who lied to me, who used me as a pawn in whatever game he is playing? If I stay here, at least I am making my own choice. She met his gaze directly, and perhaps I can be useful in ways he didn't intend. Fabian studied her for a long moment, and Catherine could feel the weight of his assessment. He was deciding whether to trust her, whether to believe her. Finally, he spoke. You may stay, but understand this, Miss Foster. I will not use you the way he did. You are not an asset to be spent. Catherine's chest tightened unexpectedly. When was the last time someone had spoken to her as if she mattered beyond what she could provide? Then what am I? She asked softly. Fabian stood slowly, moving to the window where moonlight painted his features in shades of silver and shadow. You were not sent here for me, he said again, his voice carrying a weight she did not yet understand. But perhaps you were meant to arrive anyway. Catherine did not know what to say to that, so she said nothing at all. And in the silence that followed, something began that neither of them had planned. Hey, quick question. How are you feeling right now? Thank you so much for being here. It really means the world to me. I'm working toward 1,000 subscribers. And if Catherine's arrival at Blackthorn Estate has already hooked you, please hit that subscribe button For Auriella Duke Romance Library, smash the like and drop a comment telling me where you're watching from. It helps more than you know. All right, thank you. Now let's get back to what happens when Catherine discovers the truth about why she was really sent there, and what the Duke has been hiding all along. 3 weeks earlier, Catherine Foster had believed she understood her place in the world. She sat in Victor Stevens's study, her fingers flying across the pages of his latest correspondence, organizing chaos into order the way she always did. Around her, evidence of her usefulness lay scattered across every surface. Ledgers she had balanced, letters she had drafted, social connections she had maintained on his behalf. Victor entered the room with the confident stride of a man who had never questioned his own importance. He was handsome in the conventional way, well-dressed, well-spoken, the kind of man society expected women to feel fortunate to marry. "Catherine," he said, his tone warm in the way it always was when he needed something. "How are the arrangements for the Hawthorns' dinner coming along?" "Completed this morning," Catherine replied without looking up. "I sent your regrets along with a gift that will ensure you remain in their favor, despite your absence." Victor smiled. "Brilliant. What would I do without you?" The question was rhetorical. They both knew the answer. Catherine had been 17 when Victor first noticed her at a country gathering. Not for her beauty, though she was pretty enough in an understated way. Not for her family connections, which were respectable but unremarkable. He had noticed her because she had solved a seating arrangement disaster that would have embarrassed the host, doing it so smoothly that no one even realized there had been a problem. "You have a remarkable mind," he had told her that night, "or it would be wasted on anyone who did not appreciate it." She had been young enough to believe that was a compliment. Now, at 24, she understood what he had really meant. Her mind was remarkable because it served his purposes. It was valuable because it made him appear more competent than he was. She was appreciated because she was useful, but useful was better than nothing. Useful meant security, a home, a place in society. For a woman with no fortune and modest connections, useful was the best she could hope for. Or so she had convinced herself. "I need to discuss something with you," Victor said, settling into the chair across from her desk. His tone shifted slightly. Still pleasant, but with an edge of calculation she had learned to recognize. Catherine set down her pen. "Oh, of course. There is an opportunity that has presented itself. One that could be quite advantageous for both of us." Catherine's stomach tightened. Victor's opportunities always required something from her. "What kind of opportunity?" "You are aware of Duke Fabian Osborne, I presume?" Catherine frowned. "The recluse? I have heard the rumors, if that's what you mean." "The rumors are useful," Victor said carefully. "They have isolated him from society, made him desperate." "Desperate for what?" Victor leaned forward, his expression almost gentle. "Companionship, comfort, someone to ease his suffering as his condition worsens." Catherine's blood went cold. "Victor, what are you saying?" "I am saying that the Duke has expressed interest in having a woman of quality attend to him during his final months. Someone intelligent, capable, or discreet." He paused. "Someone like you." The words landed like stones in still water, sending ripples of horror through Catherine's chest. "You want me to go to him?" "I want you to help him," Victor corrected smoothly. "To provide comfort to a dying man. Surely that is not so terrible." Catherine stood abruptly, her chair scraping against the floor. "He is a stranger, a man I have never met. And you expect me to simply go live with him?" "Temporarily," Victor said, rising as well. "Just until the situation resolves itself." The euphemism made Catherine's skin crawl. Until he dies, you mean? Catherine. Victor's voice took on a note of patient condescension. You are making this more dramatic than it needs to be. The Duke is unwell. He has been abandoned by society. This is an act of charity. Charity. Catherine repeated the word like it tasted of ash. What do you gain from this charity, Victor? For a moment, his mask slipped. Just a fraction. Just enough for Catherine to see the cold calculation underneath. The Duke's estate borders land I have been attempting to acquire. His death would simplify certain negotiations. He reached for her hand, but she pulled away. This arrangement benefits everyone. The Duke receives comfort. I secure a business advantage. And you demonstrate the kind of selflessness that will reflect well on both of us when we marry. Catherine stared at him. You have already agreed to this, haven't you? Victor's silence was answer enough. You gave me to him without asking, Catherine whispered. Like I am property to be lent out. Don't be hysterical. Victor's tone hardened. You are my fiancée. Your reputation is tied to mine. When I tell you this is important, you trust me. And if I refuse? The temperature in the room seemed to drop. Victor studied her carefully, and Catherine saw him calculating, weighing what leverage he still held, what threats might prove most effective. If you refuse, he said slowly, then you force me to reconsider our arrangement. Your family depends on the security our engagement provides. Your mother's health requires the physicians I have been funding. Your brother's position at my firm could easily be given to someone more grateful. He paused. Refuse me this, Catherine, and you refuse them security. Do you really want to be responsible for that? Catherine's hands trembled. She pressed them flat against her sides, refusing to let him see how deeply his words cut. He had never loved her. She had known that, in some abstract way. But she had believed he at least valued her, cared for her comfort, would not actively harm her. But this was harm, deliberate, calculated, wrapped in the language of opportunity and charity. How long? She asked quietly. Victor relaxed slightly, sensing victory. A few months at most. The physicians give him until autumn. And you want me to do nothing? Victor moved closer, lowering his voice, as if sharing a confidence. I want you to be kind, compassionate, but not overly helpful. Let nature take its course. The Duke's condition is beyond saving. Any attempt to interfere would only prolong his suffering. Catherine looked at the man she had agreed to marry, and saw him clearly for perhaps the first time. When do I leave? 3 days, Victor said, relief evident in his tone. I will make all the arrangements. You need only pack what you require. Catherine nodded mechanically. She did not trust herself to speak, did not trust what might emerge if she opened her mouth. Victor leaned in to kiss her forehead, a gesture of affection that now felt like ownership. You are doing the right thing, he murmured against her hair. I promise you will be rewarded for this. Catherine closed her eyes and said nothing. That night, alone in her small room, she stared at the ceiling and felt something inside her break. Not loudly, not dramatically. Just a quiet fracture, like ice cracking beneath weight it was never meant to bear. She had spent 7 years being useful to Victor Stevens. 7 years solving his problems, managing his affairs, making him appear brilliant to everyone who mattered. And when it came time for him to demonstrate even a fraction of the loyalty she had shown him, he had traded her away without hesitation. The engagement ring on her finger felt suddenly too tight, too heavy. Catherine pulled it off slowly and set it on the bedside table. She did not put it back on. 3 days later, a carriage arrived to take her to Blackthorn Estate. Victor did not come to see her off. He sent a note instead, reminding her to write regularly and to remember his instructions. Catherine folded the note carefully and left it on her bed. She would go to the Duke. She would honor the arrangement, because she had no other choice. But she would not honor Victor's intentions. If he wanted the Duke dead, then Catherine would do everything in her power to keep him alive. Not out of kindness, not out of charity, out of spite. Catherine woke on her third morning at Blackthorn Estate to discover that the Duke had not summoned her. The realization settled over her breakfast like frost over glass. She had expected to be called to his chambers, to be put to use in whatever capacity he deemed necessary. Instead, she sat alone in the guest wing's small dining room, attended by a maid who avoided eye contact and spoke only when directly addressed. "Is the Duke unwell this morning?" Catherine finally asked. The maid, a young woman named Bonnie, glanced toward the door as if checking for listeners. "His Grace is always unwell, miss. But he rose early and is in his study." "Does he require anything?" Bonnie's expression was carefully neutral. "His Grace did not mention you, miss." The words should not have stung. Catherine had no particular desire to be needed by yet another man. Yet the dismissal felt pointed, as if Fabian Osborne was making it clear that whatever Victor had intended by sending her, he would not participate. Catherine set down her teacup with more force than necessary. "Where is his study?" "Miss, I don't think..." "Where?" Bonnie's resistance crumbled under Catherine's steady gaze. "East wing. Third door past the portrait gallery." Catherine rose, smoothing her skirts with hands that trembled slightly from something that might have been anger or might have been determination. She had not asked to be here, had not volunteered for this strange arrangement. But if she was going to be trapped in this estate, or she would not sit quietly in a corner waiting to be acknowledged. The east wing was darker than the rest of the house, with heavy curtains drawn against the morning light. Catherine's footsteps echoed against marble floors as she passed beneath portraits of stern-faced ancestors who seemed to judge her presumption. She found the study door closed but not locked. She knocked once, firmly. "Enter." Fabian sat behind a massive oak desk, covered in papers, ledgers, and correspondence. He looked up as she entered, his expression shifting from concentration to something more guarded. "Miss Foster." "Your Grace." Catherine remained standing just inside the doorway. "I was told you did not require my presence this morning." "I did not?" "Or yesterday afternoon?" "No. Or the evening before that." Fabian set down his pen carefully. "What are you cataloguing my negligence?" "I am trying to understand my purpose here," Catherine said, her voice sharper than she intended. "You allowed me to stay, but you have given me nothing to do. No tasks, no responsibilities. I am simply existing in your home like an ornamental vase. Would you prefer I put you to work? I would prefer clarity." Fabian leaned back in his chair, studying her with that same intense focus that made Catherine feel like a puzzle he was trying to solve. "The truth is, Miss Foster, I do not know what to do with you." The admission surprised her. "Explain. You were sent here under false pretenses. I did not request you, and I have no intention of using you the way your fiancé intended." He paused. "But I also cannot simply send you back, or not when doing so would deliver you into the hands of a man who clearly views you as a tool to be deployed at will." Catherine's throat tightened. "So I am trapped here out of your sense of obligation? You are here because I refuse to be another man who treats you as disposable." Fabian's voice was quiet but firm. "But that does not mean I know what you are meant to do with your days." Catherine moved further into the room, her hands clasping and unclasping at her sides. I am good at organization, at problem solving, at seeing patterns others miss. Victor valued those skills at least. I could help you with your estate business if you would allow it. I manage my own affairs. Then let me help you manage your health. Fabian's expression shuddered immediately. No. Why not? Because I have endured 7 years of physicians who poke and prod and prescribe treatments that accomplish nothing except making me feel like a specimen to be studied. His voice remained level, but Catherine heard the steel beneath it. I will not add you to that list. I am not a physician. Exactly, which means you are even less qualified to interfere. Catherine felt her temper flare. I am trying to be useful. I do not want you to be useful. Fabian stood abruptly, his palms flat against the desk. I want you to simply exist here without obligation, to rest, to read if you wish, to walk the grounds, to do whatever it is women do when they are not being exploited by the men around them. The outburst hung in the air between them. Catherine stared at him, her anger draining away into something more complicated. When was the last time someone had told her to rest? To exist without purpose? Never. The answer was never. I don't know how to do that, she admitted quietly. Fabian's shoulders sagged slightly. He sat back down, suddenly looking more tired than angry. Neither do I, apparently. But perhaps we could both learn. Catherine moved to the chair opposite his desk and sat without invitation. I will make you a deal, Your Grace. I am wary of deals. As you should be. Catherine folded her hands in her lap, meeting his gaze directly. I will not push myself into your affairs uninvited. I will not attempt to manage your health or your household unless you ask. But in exchange, you must stop treating me like a guest who requires careful handling. If you have work, let me help. If you don't, tell me plainly. But do not lock me away in the guest wing like I am made of spun glass. Fabian considered this for a long moment. You want honesty. I want to feel like a person, not a problem. Something flickered across his face. Understanding, perhaps, or recognition of a feeling he knew too well. Very well, he said finally. Honesty. I do not trust easily, Miss Foster. I have been betrayed by people who claimed to want to help me. So when you offer assistance, my first instinct is to refuse it. That's fair. But, Fabian continued, I also recognize that you have been put in an impossible situation, and perhaps we would both be better served by finding a way to coexist that does not require either of us to pretend. Catherine felt something tight in her chest begin to ease. I can work with that. Can you? I can try. Fabian's mouth curved into something almost like a smile. Then try this. There are ledgers from the estate's tenant farms that need reviewing. The steward claims everything is in order, but I suspect certain expenses have been inflated. If you truly have a talent for seeing patterns, you might find it interesting. Catherine straightened. You're giving me work. I am giving you a puzzle. Fabian pushed a stack of leather-bound books across the desk. If it bores you, stop. If it interests you, continue. Either way, you are not obligated. Catherine reached for the topmost ledger, her fingers tracing the worn leather binding. Why do you suspect the steward? Because men who handle other people's money rarely do so with perfect honesty. That is cynical. That is experience. Catherine opened the ledger, scanning the neat rows of numbers and notations. Already, she could see small inconsistencies, duplicate entries, rounded figures that should have been precise. How long has he been in your employ? 4 years. And how long have these discrepancies been occurring? Fabian leaned forward slightly. You can see them already. You hired someone with a talent for patterns, Your Grace. I suggest you let me use it. For the first time since Catherine had arrived at Blackthorn Estate, Duke Fabian Osborne smiled at her. Not the bitter curve of earlier, not the careful politeness of their first meeting. A real smile, small and fleeting, but genuine. Well, then by all means, Miss Foster. Show me what you can do. Catherine bent over the ledgers with focus that felt like coming home. For the next 3 hours, she and Fabian worked in companionable silence, broken only by her occasional questions and his thoughtful answers. And somewhere in that quiet collaboration, something shifted. Catherine stopped feeling like an unwanted obligation, and Fabian stopped looking at her like she might shatter. By the time the afternoon light began to fade, Catherine had identified 17 instances of falsified expenses and built a case against the steward that would hold up under scrutiny. You were correct, she said, pushing the final ledger back across the desk. He has been stealing from you systematically for at least 2 years. Fabian reviewed her notes with the same intense focus he applied to everything. When he looked up, his expression was thoughtful. Thank you, Miss Foster. Catherine, she said impulsively, if we are to be honest with each other, you should call me Catherine. Fabian hesitated, then nodded slowly. Catherine. Then you should call me Fabian, at least when we are alone. The intimacy of the exchange was not lost on either of them. Catherine stood, suddenly aware that the room had grown dim and that they had spent the entire afternoon together without awkwardness or tension. I should dress for dinner. Catherine, Fabian's voice stopped her at the door. I am glad you stayed. She turned back to find him watching her with an expression she could not quite read, but not gratitude exactly, something deeper, more complicated. So am I, she said quietly, and meant it. The estate physician arrived on Catherine's 8th day at Blackthorn, summoned by Fabian's housekeeper without his knowledge or consent. Catherine was in the library when she heard the commotion. Raised voices echoing from the main hall, the sharp crack of a walking stick against marble, a man's imperious tone demanding to see the Duke immediately. She set down her book and moved to the doorway, watching as Edwin Collins swept through the entrance like a storm given human form. He was older, perhaps 60, with silver hair and the kind of confidence that came from never being questioned. Where is he? Edwin demanded of the butler. I was informed the Duke has been neglecting his treatments again. His Grace is in his private chambers, no, sir, but he left instructions not to be disturbed. I do not require his permission to tend to his health. Edwin started toward the stairs, then stopped abruptly as his eyes landed on Catherine. And who are you? Catherine stepped forward, her spine straight. Catherine Foster, I am a guest of the Duke. Edwin's gaze raked over her with clinical assessment. A guest? How unusual. His Grace rarely entertains visitors. Perhaps he is making an exception. Or perhaps you are another fool who believes the rumors and came seeking scandal. Edwin's tone was dismissive. I would advise you to leave before you find yourself trapped in a situation beyond your understanding. Catherine's temper flared. I understand quite well, thank you. Do you? Edwin moved closer, lowering his voice. Do you understand that the man upstairs is dying? That his condition is degenerative and incurable? That he refuses sensible treatment in favor of stubborn pride? I understand that he has been failed by his physicians. The words were out before Catherine could stop them. Edwin's expression darkened dangerously. Failed? I have dedicated years to attempting to manage an impossible condition. If you think you can do better simply by reading a few books in his library, you are dangerously naive. I did not say I could do better. I said you had failed him. Catherine held her ground despite her racing heart. Those are different things. Miss Foster. Fabian's voice cut through the tension like a blade. He stood at the top of the stairs, dressed but clearly having risen in haste. Return to the library, please. Catherine wanted to argue, wanted to stay and defend herself. But the exhaustion in Fabian's eyes stopped her. She nodded once and turned away, though she did not go far. Instead, she waited in the corridor just out of sight, listening. You should not have come, Edwin, Fabian said quietly. You have missed 3 scheduled examinations. Because they accomplish nothing except making me feel like a corpse being prepared for burial. Your condition requires monitoring. My condition requires a cure, which you have repeatedly told me does not exist. So forgive me if I choose to spare myself the indignity of your examinations. Catherine heard Edwin's frustrated sigh. Who is she? None of your concern. Everything about your health is my concern. If you have brought some charlatan into your home, promising miracle treatments, she is not a charlatan, she is a guest. That is all you need to know. Fabian, Edwin's voice softened slightly. I know you are suffering. I know the treatments are uncomfortable, but abandoning them entirely is suicide. Is it? Because from where I stand, following your advice has brought me no closer to health and considerably closer to madness. Silence fell. Catherine pressed herself against the wall, her heart pounding. I will return next week, Edwin said finally, with or without your cooperation. Someone must monitor your decline. How comforting. Catherine heard the physician's footsteps retreating, followed by the slam of the front door. She waited several minutes before returning to the main hall. Fabian still stood at the top of the stairs, gripping the railing as if it were the only thing keeping him upright. You should not have antagonized him, he said, without looking at her. He antagonized me first. He is trying to help. Is he? Catherine climbed the stairs slowly. Because it sounded to me like he was trying to control you. Fabian finally turned to face her, and Catherine saw the pain etched around his eyes. Not physical pain, though she suspected that was present too. Something deeper. The exhaustion of fighting a battle no one believed he could win. Come with me, she said impulsively. Where? Your study. You're going to sit down and eat something, and then you are going to tell me exactly what your condition is, what treatments you have tried, and why they have all failed. Fabian stared at her. I told you I do not want... I know what you told me, but I am not Edwin Collins, and I am not going to poke you or prescribe leeches or whatever medieval nonsense he inflicts. I am going to listen, and then I am going to think about it. She paused. That is what I do, Fabian. I see patterns. So let me see this one. For a long moment, he said nothing. Then, slowly, he nodded. They settled in his study with tea and bread that Fabian picked at without enthusiasm. Catherine waited, giving him time to organize his thoughts. It began 7 years ago, he finally said, a fever that would not break. When it finally did, I thought I was recovering. But then the marks appeared. He gestured to his neck. Small at first, like bruises. My physician at the time said they were a lingering effect of the illness, that they would fade. But they didn't. They spread. Slowly but relentlessly. And with them came pain. Not constant, but unpredictable. Some days I barely notice it. Other days I can hardly stand. Catherine set down her teacup. What have the physicians tried? Fabian's laugh was bitter. everything. Bloodletting, tinctures, poultices, specialized diets, complete bed rest, vigorous exercise, prayer when they ran out of medical options. He met her gaze. Nothing has worked. Nothing has even slowed it down. But it hasn't killed you either. No. Fabian's expression was unreadable, which Edwin seems to find almost as frustrating as I do. Catherine stood and moved to where Fabian sat. She knelt beside his chair, bringing herself to his eye level. May I see? She asked quietly. Fabian went very still. See what? The marks. I need to understand what we are dealing with. He studied her face for a long moment, searching for something. Pity, perhaps, or the kind of morbid curiosity that had driven away so many others. Whatever he found seemed to satisfy him, because he slowly unbuttoned his collar and pulled it aside. The marks extended down his neck and across his collarbone. Strange discolorations that looked almost like watercolor paintings beneath his skin. Some areas were pale, almost white. Others bore faint traces of purple or gray. The patterns were irregular but somehow deliberate, like his body was writing a message in a language no one could read. Catherine leaned closer, her breath catching, not from disgust or horror, from fascination. They are beautiful, she whispered. Fabian flinched. They are monstrous. No. Catherine reached out slowly, giving him time to pull away. When he did not, she let her fingertips hover just above his skin, not quite touching. Or they are evidence of a body fighting something, changing, adapting. She looked up at him. Has anyone ever considered that these are not symptoms of dying, but symptoms of your body trying desperately to heal? Fabian stared at her. That makes no sense. If my body were healing, I would feel better. Not if it does not know how to complete the process. Not if something is keeping the cycle from finishing. Catherine sat back on her heels, her mind racing. Every treatment has focused on stopping the progression. But what if that's backwards? What if your body needs help completing whatever process it started? That is speculation. All medicine starts as speculation. Catherine stood, her excitement building. Fabian, has anyone ever documented the patterns, how the marks spread, whether they follow specific paths through your body? Edwin takes notes at each examination. May I see them? Fabian hesitated, then nodded slowly. He moved to a locked cabinet and withdrew a leather portfolio. 7 years of observations. Read them if you wish. But do not expect revelation. Edwin is thorough, but he sees only what confirms his belief that I am dying. Catherine took the portfolio like it was precious. Then perhaps we need someone who is looking for something different. She settled into the chair beside the window, opening the portfolio to the first entry. Fabian watched her for a moment, then returned to his own work, giving her space to read. The afternoon faded into evening. Dinner was brought and eaten at their respective desks. Neither suggested stopping. Catherine read through years of clinical notes. I'd seeing the same observations repeated. The marks spread. The patient reports pain. No improvement noted. Prognosis remains grave. But between the lines, Catherine began to see something else. Small inconsistencies. Marks that appeared, then faded. Areas that seemed worse 1 month and better the next. A progression that was not as linear as Edwin claimed. Fabian, she said quietly, breaking the long silence. When you feel worst, does it come in cycles? He looked up from his ledger. What do you mean? The pain, the fatigue, does it worsen and ease in patterns? Fabian frowned, thinking. Perhaps. I had not thought to track it. Start tonight. Note when you feel pain, where it is located, how severe. Note when you feel better. We need more data. To what end? Catherine met his gaze across the dimly lit study, was to figure out what your body is trying to tell us. Fabian stood and crossed to where she sat, looking down at Edwin's notes spread across her lap. For a moment, neither of them spoke. Then Fabian reached out and gently closed the portfolio. "No one has ever tried to help me before," he said quietly. "Not truly. They have tried to manage my condition, to make my decline more comfortable. But no one has attempted to understand it." Catherine looked up at him, suddenly very aware of how close he was standing, how the candlelight caught in his dark hair, how his eyes, despite everything, were so remarkably clear and focused. "I am not promising I can fix this," she said softly. "But I promise I will try to understand it. If you will let me." Fabian's hand moved to her shoulder, a touch so gentle it was almost hesitant. "Why?" "Because someone should," Catherine whispered. "And because Victor wanted you dead, which means keeping you alive might be the best revenge I can imagine." Fabian's breath caught. Then, unexpectedly, he laughed. A real laugh, rusty from disuse but genuine. "Spider's motivation," he said. "I can respect that." Catherine smiled up at him, and the moment stretched between them. Warm, charged, neither moved away. Then Fabian stepped back, breaking the spell. "It is late. You should rest." Catherine nodded and rose, gathering Edwin's portfolio. "I will return these in the morning, after I have had time to think." "Catherine," Fabian's voice stopped her at the door. "Thank you." She turned back, finding him outlined against the firelight, looking less like a dying man and more like someone who had just remembered what hope felt like. "Oh, thank you for letting me try," she replied. That night, Catherine lay awake in her bed, her mind racing through possibilities. Somewhere in Edwin's notes was the key. She was certain of it. She just had to figure out what pattern everyone else had missed. Catherine spent the next 3 weeks building a case that would make Edwin Collins question everything he thought he knew. She started with charts, detailed maps of Fabian's condition that tracked every mark, every episode of pain, every variation in severity. She cross-referenced them with weather patterns, diet changes, activity levels, even the phases of the moon. She was looking for anything that might explain the cycles she suspected were there. Fabian cooperated with a mixture of skepticism and curiosity. Each evening they met in his study, Valenti reported his symptoms with clinical precision, where the pain had been sharpest, which marks seemed darker or lighter than the day before. How his energy had fluctuated. "You are turning me into a scientific experiment," he observed one evening, watching Catherine add another notation to her growing collection of papers. "I am turning your suffering into data," Catherine corrected. "Data can be analyzed. Patterns can be found. Mysteries can be solved. Or you will conclude, like everyone else, that I am simply dying slowly." Catherine looked up from her work. "Do you believe that?" Fabian was quiet for a moment. "I did. Until you arrived and started acting like there might be another explanation." "Because there is." Catherine tapped her pen against the chart. "Look at this. 3 weeks ago, you reported severe pain in your left shoulder. The marks there were dark, almost black. Now they are gray, fading, which Edwin would say is evidence of tissue death. Except the pain is gone. Dead tissue does not stop hurting. It becomes worse." Catherine stood and crossed to where Fabian sat. "May I?" He nodded, and Catherine gently pulled back his collar to examine his shoulder. The marks had indeed faded from their previous intensity. The skin beneath them looked healthier, almost normal. "This is not death," Catherine murmured. "This is healing." "Then why does it keep happening in new places?" "That is the question." Catherine traced the pattern with her finger, careful not to press too hard. If I am right, your body is trying to repair something, but it does not know how to do it correctly. So it tries, fails, moves on, or tries again elsewhere. Fabian shivered slightly under her touch, though Catherine could not tell if it was from cold or something else. You are theorizing, he said, his voice rougher than usual. I am observing. Catherine stepped back, suddenly aware of how intimate the moment had become. But I need more information. I need to see Edwin's original notes from when this started, not his summaries, the raw observations. He keeps those at his practice. Then we need to get them. Fabian raised an eyebrow. You want to steal my physician's records? I want to borrow them temporarily without his knowledge. Catherine smiled slightly. There is a difference. A technical one. The best differences are. Fabian studied her thoughtfully. You have changed since you arrived here. Have I? You are more confident, less careful, less worried about appearing proper. He paused. I like it. Catherine felt heat rise in her cheeks. My fiancé valued my usefulness. He did not particularly care for my confidence. Your former fiancé is a fool. Former? Fabian's gaze was steady. You have not mentioned him in weeks. You removed your engagement ring the third day you were here. I assumed the arrangement had been dissolved. Catherine looked down at her bare hand. She had not even consciously removed the ring. It had simply felt wrong one morning, and she had left it in her drawer. Nothing formal has been done, she admitted. But yes, in every way that matters, I am no longer engaged to Victor Stevens. Good. The word hung between them, weighted with implications neither was quite ready to explore. A knock at the door broke the moment. De Bonny entered with a curtsy. Begging your pardon, Your Grace, but Dr. Collins has arrived. He is most insistent on seeing you. Fabian's expression shuttered immediately. Tell him I am not receiving visitors. He says he will wait however long necessary. Catherine and Fabian exchanged glances. She could see him calculating, weighing the cost of confrontation against the exhaustion of compliance. Send him to the drawing room, Catherine said, before Fabian could refuse again. I will speak with him. Catherine, trust me. She placed a hand on his arm. Let me handle this. Fabian looked like he wanted to argue, but finally he nodded. Catherine found Edwin Collins pacing the drawing room like a caged wolf. He turned sharply as she entered. Where is he? Resting, Catherine said calmly. His Grace asked me to receive you on his behalf. Edwin's eyes narrowed. Still here, I see. I had hoped you would have the sense to leave. Sense would dictate I stay exactly where I am being useful. Useful. Edwin spat the word. You have been filling his head with nonsense, giving him false hope with your amateur theories. Have you been spying on us, Dr. Collins? I have been informed by concerned staff that you have been conducting examinations without medical training or authorization. He stepped closer. You are endangering my patient. Your patient has been suffering under your care for 7 years without improvement. I hardly think my presence could make things worse. You know nothing about his condition. I know that you have declared him incurable without actually understanding what is wrong with him. Edwin's face flushed with anger. I have dedicated my career to medicine. I have studied under the finest physicians in Europe. And you think you, a woman with no formal education, can simply waltz in and solve what has baffled experts? Yes. Catherine held his gaze steadily. Because I am not trying to fit him into categories that already exist. I am looking at what is actually happening. And what have you concluded? Edwin's tone was mocking. What brilliant insight has your untrained eye discovered? Catherine made a decision. She moved to the writing desk and withdrew the charts she had been building. She spread them across the surface, forcing Edwin to look. "The marks follow a pattern," she said, pointing to the documented progression. "They appear, intensify, then fade, always in the same general time frame, approximately 6 to 8 weeks per cycle." Edwin glanced at the charts dismissively. "I am aware of the progression. Are you aware that the fading marks show signs of tissue regeneration, that the areas which were previously affected are healthier now than they were before? That is impossible. The condition is degenerative." "Based on what evidence? Show me the tissue samples. Show me the definitive diagnosis." Catherine's voice sharpened. "You have been treating symptoms without understanding the disease. And because the symptoms are unusual, you have assumed the worst." Edwin's hands clenched at his sides. "You are meddling in matters beyond your comprehension? Then educate me. Show me your original notes from when this began. Let me see the complete picture." "Absolutely not. Those records are confidential. They are the property of your patient, who I am certain would grant permission if asked." Edwin moved toward the door, his face rigid with fury. "Stay out of my way, Miss Foster. I will not be undermined by an ignorant woman playing at medicine." He left before Catherine could respond. She stood alone in the drawing room, her hands shaking slightly from the confrontation. But beneath the trembling was certainty. Edwin was hiding something. Whether intentionally or through sheer stubbornness, he was blocking the very information they needed, which meant Catherine would have to find another way to get it. That night, as after the household had settled into sleep, Catherine slipped out of her room dressed in dark clothing. She had questioned Bonnie carefully about Edwin's practice. It was only 3 miles from the estate, in the village proper, a distance easily walkable for someone determined. The night was cool but clear, with enough moonlight to see the road. Catherine made the journey quickly, her heart pounding with a mixture of fear and exhilaration. Breaking into a physician's office was not something she had ever imagined doing. But then, being traded to a dying duke was not something she had imagined either. Circumstances had a way of expanding one's possibilities. Edwin's practice was a small brick building attached to his home. Catherine circled it carefully, looking for the easiest entry point. A window at the back was slightly ajar, likely for ventilation. She pushed it open and climbed through, wincing as her skirts caught on the sill. Inside, the office smelled of antiseptic and old paper. Moonlight filtering through the windows provided just enough illumination to see. Catherine found the filing cabinets and began searching. It took nearly an hour, going through patient records alphabetically. But finally she found it. A thick file labeled Osborne F. Confidential. She pulled it out and moved to the desk, spreading the contents carefully. Edwin's early notes were meticulous, detailed observations of the initial illness, sketches of how the marks had first appeared, theories about possible causes. But as Catherine read deeper, she saw something that made her blood run cold. Edwin had suspected from the beginning that Fabian's condition was not degenerative. His early notes included observations about tissue regeneration, about unusual healing patterns, about a body that seemed to be fighting something with extraordinary determination. But then the notes changed, became less curious and more clinical. The language shifted from healing to deteriorating, from unusual recovery patterns to progressive decline. And in the margins of one particular entry from 5 years ago, Catherine found a small notation in different ink. Patient's recovery would be inconvenient. Better to manage decline. Catherine's hands shook as she read those words again. And again. Edwin had known. Perhaps not the full truth, but he had seen evidence of healing. and he had chosen to suppress it. The question was why. Catherine carefully copied the most relevant passages into a small notebook she had brought. She returned the files exactly as she had found them, climbed back through the window, and walked back to Blackthorn Estate with her mind churning. By the time she reached Fabian's study, dawn was breaking. He looked up in surprise as she entered without knocking, still wearing her dark clothing, her hair coming loose from its pins. "Catherine, where have you been?" She dropped the notebook on his desk. "Reading the truth." Fabian picked it up, his eyes scanning her notes. With each line, his expression grew harder, colder. "He knew," Fabian said quietly. "Not everything, but enough to realize you might not be dying. And he buried it." "Why would he do that?" Catherine thought of Victor, of men who valued control over truth, of power structures built on keeping people dependent. "Because a patient who recovers does not need a physician," she said, "but a patient who slowly declines needs constant management, constant treatment, constant payment." Fabian closed the notebook carefully. When he looked at Catherine, something dangerous flickered in his eyes. "What do we do?" Catherine met his gaze steadily. "We prove him wrong. We figure out what your body is trying to do, and we help it succeed." "And then?" "And then Edwin Collins faces the consequences of his failure." Fabian stood and crossed to where Catherine stood. He reached up and gently pulled a leaf from her hair, evidence of her nighttime journey. "You are remarkable," he said softly. Catherine's breath caught. "I am angry." "That too." His fingers lingered near her face. "Thank you for caring enough to be angry on my behalf." Their eyes met and held. But Catherine was suddenly intensely aware of how close they were standing, of the way Fabian was looking at her. Not as a patient grateful to his caretaker, not as a duke tolerating a guest, as a man who saw a woman he wanted. "Fabian," she whispered. "I should not," he murmured, but he did not step away. "No," Catherine agreed. "You should not." Neither of them moved. The moment stretched, taut with possibility. Catherine could feel her heart hammering against her ribs, could see the rapid pulse at Fabian's throat. Then, slowly, giving her every opportunity to pull away, Fabian leaned forward. His lips brushed hers. Soft, questioning, achingly gentle. Catherine's eyes closed. Her hand came up to rest against his chest, feeling his heartbeat match her own frantic rhythm. The kiss deepened slightly. Still restrained, still careful, but unmistakably real. When they finally parted, both were breathing hard. "This is unwise," Fabian said, his voice rough. "Extremely," Catherine agreed. "You have only just ended one engagement." "To a man I never loved." Fabian's eyes searched hers. "And this? What is this?" Catherine considered lying, considered protecting herself with careful distance, but she had spent too many years being useful instead of honest. "I do not know yet," she admitted, "but I would like to find out." Fabian's thumb traced her cheekbone. "If we do this, there is no going back." "Good," Catherine said. "I am tired of going backward." He kissed her again, and this time there was nothing restrained about it. For 2 more weeks, Catherine hunted the truth. During the day, she and Fabian maintained careful propriety. They worked in his study, reviewing charts and observations. They took walks through the estate gardens, discussing possibilities. To any observer, they were simply duke and guest engaged in intellectual collaboration. But in the evenings, when the household settled into sleep, Catherine would slip down the darkened corridors to Fabian's private chambers. They would sit by the fire, sometimes talking, sometimes simply existing in comfortable silence. And often, Fabian would reach for her hand, or she would lean against his shoulder, and the careful distance they maintained during daylight would dissolve into something warmer. They did not speak of it explicitly, did not define what was growing between them. It was too new, too fragile, too dangerous to examine too closely. Instead, Catherine focused on the puzzle that had consumed her thoughts, or she compiled every piece of data she could find. Fabian's symptoms, the progression patterns, the environmental factors, the failed treatments. She read medical texts from his library, consulted herbalist manuals, even dug through ancient estate records describing illnesses among previous generations. And slowly, impossibly, a pattern began to emerge. It was late one evening when Catherine finally saw it. She had been staring at her charts so long her eyes burned. Fabian had dozed off in his chair, his head tilted back, his breathing deep and even. The fire had burned low, casting the study in warm shadows. Catherine stood to stretch her aching back, and as she moved, the candlelight fell across her papers from a new angle. The marks, the progression, the cycles, they were not random. They were systematic, methodical, like the body was working through a specific sequence, trying to complete a process it had begun years ago. Catherine's hands shook as she pulled out Fabian's medical history, the initial illness, the fever that had started everything. What if it had never truly ended? What if Fabian's body had been fighting that original infection for 7 years, trying to purge something that had embedded itself deep in his tissues? And what if the marks were not symptoms of failure, but evidence of an immune response that could not quite finish what it had started? The body trying to heal itself over and over in an endless cycle because something was blocking completion. Catherine's breath came faster. Her mind raced through the implications. If she was right, then the treatments had been backwards all along. Edwin's interventions had been focused on suppressing the symptoms, stopping the marks, reducing inflammation. But what if those symptoms were necessary? What if the body needed to complete its inflammatory response to finally purge whatever had been poisoning Fabian all these years? Catherine? She spun to find Fabian awake, watching her with sleep-blurred eyes. I need to test something, she said urgently. Fabian sat up, suddenly alert. What did you find? Catherine crossed to him, her papers clutched in her hands. The fever that started this. Do you remember what you were doing when you fell ill? Fabian frowned, thinking back. I had been traveling, visiting estate properties in the south. Were you bitten by anything? Scratched? Exposed to anything unusual? There was an incident. Fabian's brow furrowed. A dog on one of the tenant farms. It had been acting strangely, aggressive. It bit me before it could be contained. Catherine's heart raced. What happened to the dog? It died. The following day. The farmer claimed it had been ill for some time. And you fell ill shortly after. Within the week, yes. Catherine sank to her knees beside his chair, her mind working frantically. Fabian, what if the original illness was not just a fever? What if that dog transmitted something? An infection that embedded itself in your tissue, and your body has been fighting it ever since? Edwin tested for infections. He found nothing, because he was looking for active infection. But what if it is dormant, hiding in your cells, triggering inflammation whenever your immune system tries to clear it? Catherine gripped his hands. Or the marks appear when your body attacks the infection. They fade when the inflammation dies down without completing the purge. Then it starts again somewhere else, because the source is still there. Fabian stared at her. That would mean I am not dying. That would mean you have been slowly fighting something your body cannot quite reach. Catherine stood, pacing. We need to help your immune system finish what it started. We need to trigger a complete inflammatory response, strong enough to purge everything. That could kill me, or it could save you. Catherine met his eyes. Every treatment you have received has been designed to reduce inflammation, to calm your body's response. But what if we did the opposite? What if we deliberately triggered the strongest immune response possible and helped your body see it through to completion? Fabian stood slowly, his expression caught between hope and fear. How? Catherine's mind raced through the medical texts she had read, the herbalist manuals, the old wives' remedies that physicians dismissed. We induce a controlled fever, she said, high enough to activate every defense your body has. We support it with fluids and cooling measures to prevent actual harm, and we wait for the crisis to break. That is insane. It is everything Edwin has told you not to do. Fabian laughed, a sound caught between desperation and exhilaration. When would we do this? Soon, before Edwin returns for his next examination. Before anyone can stop us. Catherine moved closer to him. But Fabian, you need to understand. This could fail. It could make everything worse. I am not a physician. I am making educated guesses based on patterns and hope. Fabian reached up and cupped her face in his hands. Do you believe it will work? Catherine thought of all the data she had collected, the cycles that made no sense unless the body was fighting something, the regeneration Edwin had documented, then ignored. The way Fabian had survived 7 years of an illness that should have killed him. Yes, she said. I believe your body knows how to heal itself. It just needs permission to finish. Fabian leaned his forehead against hers. Then we try. They spent the next 2 days preparing. Catherine researched fever-inducing herbs and protocols. She gathered supplies, arranged for the staff to be given unexpected leave, ensuring privacy. Now prepared ice and cool water and everything they might need if the fever became too dangerous. Fabian settled his affairs quietly, just in case. On the third night, Catherine entered his chambers with a tea made from yarrow and boneset, herbs known to trigger intense immune responses. Fabian sat by the fire, watching her approach. Last chance to change your mind, Catherine said softly. I have been dying slowly for 7 years, Fabian replied. I would rather risk death trying to live. Catherine knelt beside his chair and handed him the cup. Drink this. All of it. Fabian took it without hesitation and drained the contents. The tea was bitter, and he grimaced. How long? He asked. The fever should begin within an hour. It will build gradually. Catherine took the empty cup and set it aside. I will stay with you through all of it. You should not. If this goes wrong, then I will be here. Catherine took his hand. You are not facing this alone. Fabian pulled her closer, and Catherine let herself be drawn into his lap. She settled against his chest, feeling his heartbeat strong and steady beneath her ear. They sat like that, as the fire burned low and the night deepened. Fabian's arms wrapped around her waist, her head tucked beneath his chin. Neither spoke. There was nothing left to say. The fever began as Fabian had predicted. First a flush across his skin, then trembling, then heat that radiated from him, like he had swallowed the sun. Catherine eased him into bed, covering him with light linens. She bathed his forehead with cool cloths, helped him drink when his throat grew too dry. The marks darkened rapidly, or spreading across his chest and arms in patterns Catherine had never seen before. They looked almost like rivers of shadow beneath his skin, all flowing toward some central point. Fabian's breathing grew labored. His body shook with chills despite the fever burning through him. "Talk to me," he gasped. "Keep me here." Catherine climbed onto the bed beside him, holding his hand tightly. I am here. I am not leaving. If this does not work, it will work. Catherine. His eyes found hers, fever bright but focused. If it does not, I need you to know. These past weeks with you have been the only time I have felt truly alive in 7 years. Catherine's throat tightened. Do not say goodbye. I am saying thank you. Fabian's fingers tightened around hers. For seeing me, or for believing I was worth saving. You are worth everything, Catherine whispered fiercely. Fabian's eyes closed. His breathing came in sharp, painful gasps. The marks on his skin were almost black now, spreading faster than Catherine had ever seen. She monitored his pulse, his temperature, waited for the crisis point she knew had to come. It happened just before dawn. Fabian convulsed once, his entire body going rigid. Catherine held him steady, her own heart hammering with terror. Then he went completely still. For one horrible moment, Catherine thought she had killed him, but his chest rose, fell, rose again, and slowly, impossibly, the marks began to fade. Not the way they had before, not the slow recession over weeks. This was rapid, deliberate, like ink being drawn back into a well. Catherine watched, breathless, as the darkness retreated from Fabian's skin, as color returned to his face. As his breathing eased into something deeper and more natural than she had ever heard. The fever broke with the sunrise. Fabian opened his eyes as golden light spilled through the windows. He looked at Catherine, his gaze clear and focused in a way it had not been for hours. Am I alive? He asked, his voice rough. Catherine laughed, the sound breaking on a sob. Yes. Very much alive. Fabian lifted a shaking hand to his chest, touching the skin where the marks had been darkest. They were gone. Not faded. Gone. His skin was pale but whole. Unmarked. It worked, he breathed. It worked, Catherine confirmed. Fabian reached for her, pulling her down against him with sudden strength. He kissed her fiercely, untasting of salt and relief, and something that felt like joy. You saved me, he murmured against her lips. We saved you, Catherine corrected. Your body did the work. I just gave it permission. They lay together as the morning light grew stronger, neither willing to move, neither willing to break the spell of this impossible moment. What happens now? Fabian asked eventually. Catherine thought of Edwin, of Victor, of the world beyond Blackthorn Estate that still believed Duke Fabian Osborne was dying. Now, she said, we show them how wrong they were. The recovery was not instantaneous, but it was undeniable. Within a week, Fabian's color had returned completely. His strength rebuilt itself day by day. The pain that had plagued him for 7 years vanished like it had never existed. Dr. Edwin Collins arrived for his scheduled examination to find Fabian walking the estate gardens without assistance, his skin clear, his vitality obvious. The physician stood frozen in the entrance hall, his medical bag clutched in white-knuckled hands. This is impossible, Edwin whispered. Catherine descended the stairs to stand beside Fabian. No, Dr. Collins. It is simply what happens when someone actually tries to heal rather than manage decline. Edwin's gaze snapped to her, and she saw the moment he understood. You did this. She saved my life, Fabian said, his voice carrying the weight of absolute authority, which makes your failure over the past 7 years all the more damning. I followed established protocols. I provided the best care medical science could offer. You provided the care that kept me dependent on you, Fabian corrected coldly. You saw evidence of potential recovery and buried it. I have your notes, Edwin. All of them. Edwin went pale. You broke into my office. I borrowed records that should have been shared with me from the beginning. Fabian stepped forward, and despite his recent illness, he moved with the coiled power of someone who would not be challenged. You let me suffer because it benefited you. That ends now. You cannot prove. I can prove that you documented regenerative healing and chose not to pursue it. I can prove that you dismissed alternative approaches without investigation. I can prove that you labeled me terminal when your own notes suggested otherwise. Fabian's voice dropped to something dangerous. Or would you like me to share those proofs with the medical board? Or would you prefer to quietly retire from practice? Edwin's face twisted through rage, fear, and finally resignation. You would ruin me. You ruined 7 years of my life. I am being generous. Edwin looked between Fabian and Catherine, something ugly flickering in his expression. She has bewitched you, filled your head with dangerous ideas. When you relapse, I will not relapse. Fabian's certainty was absolute. Because the infection you never bothered to properly identify has been purged, my body has healed itself, and I have Miss Foster to thank for recognizing what you refuse to see. Edwin opened his mouth, then closed it. He seemed to age a decade in that moment, his shoulders slumping. I am sorry, he said finally, though the words sounded hollow. I believed I was helping. You believed what was convenient, Catherine said quietly. That is not the same thing. Edwin left without another word. They never saw him again. The news of Fabian's recovery spread through society like wildfire. The Duke, who had been dying, was not only alive, but thriving. The rumors that had painted him as monstrous dissolved in the face of his obvious vitality. Invitations began arriving, requests for audiences. Society suddenly remembered it had always held Duke Fabian Osborne in the highest regard. Fabian burned most of them. But one letter he read carefully before handing it to Catherine. It was from Victor Stevens. Your Grace, it began with oily formality. I was delighted to hear of your remarkable recovery. As you may recall, as I had sent my dear fiancée, Catherine Foster, to provide comfort during your illness. I trust she served you well, and I would be grateful if you would arrange for her safe return now that your health is restored. Catherine felt cold rage settle in her chest. He still thinks I am his. Are you? Fabian asked quietly. Catherine looked up at him, at the man who had been a stranger 6 weeks ago, and was now someone she could not imagine being without, who had never asked her to be useful, who had seen her as a partner, not an asset. No, she said firmly. I am not. Then we should make that clear. They wrote the response together, Fabian's elegant script filling the page with words that left no room for misinterpretation. Mr. Stevens, Miss Catherine Foster is no longer in your service or under your authority. What our engagement was dissolved by mutual agreement weeks ago. She has chosen to remain at Blackthorn Estate of her own free will, and in a capacity you have no claim to question. You traded her away, expecting me to die, and your schemes to prosper. I suggest you adjust your expectations regarding both outcomes. Duke Fabian Osborne. They sent it by courier that same day. Victor's response arrived within 48 hours. Not by letter this time. He came in person. Catherine was in the library when she heard the commotion in the entrance hall, raised voices, the butler's firm attempts to deny entry, and then Victor's unmistakable tone demanding to see what was rightfully his. She stood slowly, her hands steady despite her racing heart. Fabian appeared in the library doorway. He is here. I know. You do not have to face him. Yes, Catherine said quietly. I do. They descended to the drawing room together. Victor stood with his back to the door, radiating indignation. He turned as they entered, and Catherine saw the moment he registered their linked hands, saw the calculation in his eyes as he assessed the situation. "Catherine," he said, his voice dripping false warmth. "Thank God. I was worried you had been coerced into staying here." "I was coerced into coming here," Catherine corrected coldly. "By you. Staying was my choice." Victor's smile tightened. "Surely you are grateful for your service to the Duke to be completed. You can come home now." "This is my home." The words hung in the air. Victor's expression flickered through confusion, anger, and finally understanding. "Well, you cannot possibly think to remain here. People will talk. Your reputation, my reputation, was already sacrificed when you sent me to a man's private estate unchaperoned," Catherine said. "I find I care very little about society's opinion now." Victor's gaze shifted to Fabian. "Your Grace, surely you see the impropriety of keeping another man's fiancée under your roof." "Miss Foster is not your fiancée," Fabian said, with devastating calm. "She has not been since she removed your ring weeks ago. A fact you would know if you had bothered to inquire about her well-being even once during her time here. I entrusted her to your care. You traded her like property and expected me to be dead before anyone noticed." Fabian's voice remained level, but Catherine heard the steel beneath it. "That plan failed spectacularly, and I suggest you accept defeat with what little grace you can manage." Victor's composure finally cracked. "You think you can simply take her? I made her what she is. I gave her a place in society. She owes me." "Nothing," Catherine interrupted, her voice ringing with absolute conviction. "I owe you nothing, Victor. I gave you 7 years of my life, my skills, my loyalty, and you repaid me by gambling my safety for your ambitions. That debt is settled." "You are making a mistake," Victor said, his tone turning threatening. "Without me, you have no connections, no support. Your family, my family will manage," Catherine said. "As will I." Victor stared at her, as if seeing a stranger. Perhaps he was. The Catherine who had quietly accepted his decisions and swallowed her doubts no longer existed. She had burned away in Blackthorn's fires like an infection finally purged. "You will regret this," Victor said quietly. "The only thing I regret," Catherine replied, "is not leaving you years ago." Victor's face twisted with fury. For a moment, Catherine thought he might actually try to physically remove her. But Fabian shifted slightly, moving between them, and something in his posture made Victor reconsider. "This is not over," Victor said instead. "Yes," Fabian said. "It is. Leave my estate, Mr. Stevens, and do not return." The butler appeared as if summoned, 2 footmen at his side. Victor looked between them, his face mottled with rage and humiliation. He left without another word. Catherine did not watch him go. She had already turned away, her hand still clasped in Fabian's, or her future suddenly vast and terrifying and entirely her own. "Are you all right?" Fabian asked softly once they were alone. Catherine thought about the question. She was unengaged, unchaperoned, living in a duke's estate with no formal role or protection. By every measure of propriety, she should be ruined. But she had never felt more powerful. "Yes," she said. "I am all right." Fabian pulled her closer, his arms wrapping around her waist. "Catherine Foster, I have a question to ask you." Catherine's heart stuttered. "What kind of question?" "The kind that requires a proper answer, not a strategic one." Fabian's thumb traced her cheekbone. "Will you stay here? Not as a guest, not as a companion, but as mine?" Catherine's breath caught. "Are you proposing?" "Not yet." Fabian's smile was small and genuine. "You just ended one engagement. but I would not rush you into another before you have had time to simply exist without obligation. He paused. But I want you to know my intentions. When you are ready, if you are ready, I will ask properly. With a ring and ceremony and everything society expects. And if I am never ready, then I will be grateful for whatever you choose to give me. Fabian's expression was utterly sincere. I do not need you to be useful, Catherine. I do not need you to manage my affairs or elevate my status. I simply want you here because you choose to be. Catherine felt tears prick her eyes. I choose to be here. Then that is enough. He kissed her then, and Catherine felt the last pieces of her old life fall away. Victor's ring was gone. Edwin's failures were exposed. What the woman who had arrived at Blackthorn, believing she was being discarded, had discovered she was worth choosing. Fabian, she murmured against his lips. Yes? Ask me anyway. He pulled back, searching her face. Are you certain? I spent 7 years being certain I could not have better than what I was offered. I am done settling. Catherine's hands cupped his face. Ask me. Fabian sank to one knee before her, and Catherine's breath left her in a rush. Catherine Foster, he said, his voice steady and sure. You saw me when the world had already written me off. You fought for my life when it would have been easier to let me fade. You are brilliant and stubborn and absolutely terrifying in the best possible way. He took her hands in his. I have no ring yet, no formal preparation. But I cannot wait another moment to ask, will you marry me? Catherine's vision blurred with tears. Yes. Fabian stood and swept her into his arms, lifting her off her feet as he kissed her with an intensity that spoke of relief and joy and promises kept. When he set her down, both were breathless. Your Grace, Catherine said with a smile, I believe we have scandalized your entire household. Let them talk. Fabian's grin was wicked. We will give them much better material to gossip about once we are married. Catherine laughed, the sound bright and free. You are incorrigible. I am alive, Fabian corrected. Thanks to you. We saved each other, Catherine said. Let's be clear about that. Fabian tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, his touch tender. Very well. Then let us continue saving each other for the rest of our lives. I can accept those terms. They stood together in the drawing room as sunset light painted everything gold. Outside, the estate gardens bloomed with early spring flowers. The household carried on with its usual business, only slightly rattled by the day's excitement. And inside, two people who had been given up on by the world found themselves choosing each other with absolute certainty. 3 months later, Catherine Foster became Catherine Osborne, Duchess of Blackthorn, in a ceremony attended by a small collection of genuine friends and conspicuously absent Victor Stevens. She wore a gown of deep blue silk. Fabian stood beside her in perfect health, his vows steady and sure. When the vicar pronounced them married, Orfabian kissed her like she was the only solid thing in a tilting world. And Catherine, who had spent so many years being useful to people who did not value her, finally understood what it meant to be truly chosen. Not for what she could provide, not for what she could accomplish, but simply for who she was. In the months that followed, Catherine established a clinic on the estate grounds. She worked with physicians who were willing to challenge conventional thinking, who saw patients as people, not just collections of symptoms to be managed. Fabian supported her work without question, providing funding and resources. He also recovered his position in society, though he was far more selective about which invitations he accepted. They received word that Edwin Collins had retired to the countryside, that Victor Stevens had suffered a series of business reversals, and was no longer the rising star he had once been. Catherine felt no particular satisfaction in their downfalls. She was too busy building a life that mattered. But on quiet evenings, when she and Fabian sat together in his study, working on their respective projects with the easy companionship of true partnership, Catherine would sometimes look up and catch him watching her. "What?" she would ask, smiling. "Just remembering," Fabian would reply, "the night you walked into my chambers expecting to find a monster, and found a duke instead, and found each other." Catherine would cross to him then, settling into his lap the way she had that first fevered night. And Fabian would wrap his arms around her, pulling her close. "I love you," he would murmur against her hair. "But I know," Catherine would reply. "I figured that out when you chose to live. I chose to live because you gave me a reason to." And Catherine, who had spent so many years believing she was only as valuable as her usefulness, had finally learned that being loved for simply existing was the greatest gift of all. They said the Duke was rotting. They said Catherine was being sacrificed. They were wrong about everything. And that's Catherine's story, from the woman Victor traded away to the Duchess who chose her own destiny. If you loved watching Catherine and Fabian rewrite their fate together, please hit that like button. Subscribe to Ariella Duke Romance Library for more stories of love, revenge, and resilience. And drop a comment telling me where you're watching from. I love hearing from you all. Thank you so much for being here. Until the next story, remember, you are never just useful. You are worth choosing.